Hello and welcome to the latest Talking Points podcast. As ever, my name's James Skoltok and I'm the IMI's MotorPro magazine editor. In this edition, we're joined by the IMI's policy guru, Hayley Pells, to talk through the work she's doing to make sure members and the industry has a voice when politicians are creating new legislation. So, without further ado, let's dive in. In terms of policy, as an IMI member talking to them directly, policy and public affairs then, why should an IMI member, if you were in front of them, why should they be interested in your part of the IMI and why is it important to them?
So from the value research piece that we did in 2021 with Membership Matters, the priorities from our membership, what they told us and what they expect from us, is the top of the list. They want us to uphold professional standards through qualifications relevant to the modern automotive sector. So where policy links into that is what do those qualifications look like? Because they are supported ultimately by policy. So if our government is determining what we want from our industry and how that is going to translate into qualifications, then we need a voice at that table. So it's sort of, if that's the top line priority from our membership, I think with the educational reform that is happening, if we are going to uphold professional standards through qualifications relevant to the modern automotive sector, we need a seat at that table.
Yeah. And I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate, but I'm going to assume that if I was to ask members whether or not people in Westminster listen, they'd probably say no. But from your experience of having done this job, when you're conversing with people about skills, for example, or the MOT consultation, in fact, from not so long ago, do they actually listen to what you're saying and take it on board?
I think absolutely ministers do listen and take things on board. Ultimately, I do think our ministers are driven by the desire to do a good job. It is such an enormously time-consuming job. I think it does rely on everybody being good chaps. So they do have this drive to represent their constituents and also the sectoral matters that they're involved with. And I think where we can look to the success of the IMI with this engagement is definitely with things like the heavy vehicle technician funding, where we were quite relentless with our campaigning and support for that. And we did see that increase, which was a step in the right direction. We are mentioned directly and debated directly within the House of Commons, and that can be found in the Hansard on the parliamentary website, where the work that we're doing to represent the sector is formally debated. So we are making changes. It's an incredibly exciting place to be. But sometimes we don't have to take it to Westminster. So if we want to make changes with primary legislation, then absolutely we want to get involved at Westminster. And we'll do that either through MPs, so we can get involved with the parliamentary debates within the houses. But most often, we'll operate within the select committees or the all-party parliamentary groups, which is where parliamentarians can come together with representatives from all kinds of stakeholders. And we're there for the motor industry. And they ask us questions and we give the answers that we get from our membership. I absolutely rely on the information that comes in from our membership to say, this is what is happening in industry. This is what is happening at the coalface. This is what we need. And this is what legislation we'd like to see to support that. But once the primary legislation has been made, and if we need to make changes within secondary legislation, so this is where something like the MOT consultation is a really good example because it's current, it's on people's radar. We might be making changes within the statutory instruments, and the primary legislation allows that to happen at departmental level. So that means we go to the Department for Transport and we can make changes within that legislation that better reflects the needs of the sector. An example of that that everybody will remember will be when we stopped testing classic cars. So we didn't have to go to consultation. We didn't have to do anything. The decision was made because the structure was there within the primary legislation to allow the department to make those changes, to allow the business of the country to just carry on.
Yeah.
And what we can do is if those changes happen, we can get involved. But where I'm now moving to, which is a real step forward, is before those changes are happening, we now have a seat at that table. We have a voice in those matters and we can represent those within our membership and the sector at large.
Yeah. A fairly basic question, I guess. But in terms of the mechanics of it, how did the IMI get its seat at the table, I guess, so it could have these conversations and discussions?
Specifically for the MOT consultation?
Yeah, well, that would be a good example, I guess.
Yeah, so we can start with that. So if the government wants to make some major changes, we can have either a consultation, call for evidence, and we access in the normal way any ordinary person can access. So you go onto the government portal and you fill in the criteria and you answer the questions. It's that one was quite laborious. I was about to say it's really rather easy, but that one is a really bad example because I think it took ages. But what we do from the Institute is we can use our huge amount of research power and analysis, our data analysis and research. We've got experienced people who know this industry, who also know how to critically analyze this information. So we can draw really accurate evidence that can be fundamental to how the direction of this proposed change can happen. So as well as taking the opinions of those that we represent, we can critically analyze the data to quite a serious granular level before we then present that to the department. With Westminster, that's more of an in-person kind of affair. So in Westminster, really being there and having those real conversations, that seems to be what makes the difference with that strategy. So it's about looking at what piece of legislation is coming up, what's being discussed in Parliament, how much of it is of interest to the motor industry, what legislation is being proposed, spotting the unintended consequence that could affect us, and making sure we head that off before it has a chance to take root.
Yeah, I was going to ask, actually, maybe it's obvious, but how do you decide where would it be worth putting your voice into, and how do you decide which topics are of interest to the IMI and the wider members as well in the industry?
Well, the nice thing about Parliament is they are very transparent with their operation. And it is a rather large beast, so it takes a little bit of practice to understand how it operates. But again, all of that information is out there in the public sphere. So we first take a look at what proposed legislation is moving through the houses. And we then look at what select committees that they're going to go through, what calls for evidence are in play, and we then create the strategy from that. If there's something that we feel needs a direct piece of lobbying, I think is possibly the best word to use here. If there's something that's pertinent to us that isn't tabled as ordinary parliamentary business, we now have those pathways to take them to the most senior level. So the best example of that was the parliamentary debate that happened a couple of weeks ago, where we're looking for improvements for further education lecturers. And that got debated straight away within the House. So that wasn't tabled business, but this is something that is important to us within the sector. We need a better deal for our FE lecturers. That's something very important to us. So having that ability to reach the people who can make those changes has been really important.
And it's no secret that, you know, we're heading towards a general election which means that there's going to be
as early as spring.
Yeah, exactly. Which means there's going to be a lot of movement. There's going to be a lot of posturing from the different political parties. How do you navigate that kind of landscape?
Well, we've got sort of 1,200 parliamentarians operating between both houses, and I don't know all of them yet. I think I don't know all of them yet. I keep a close eye on the select committees that are important to us. We keep an eye on the cabinet. We keep an eye on who is progressing within their career. So sometimes, I mean, we're in an interesting space at the moment with parliamentarians. So you've got your cabinet, so all of your ministers and what have you, but we're getting just as much activity from our backbenchers than we ever have, and we're seeing more backbenchers work against the whip. So the you don't really see a two-line whip anymore. You'll see either a single or a three-line whip, and this is the party's overall strategy. And they will dictate to their MPs how they want them to behave. But we're seeing more and more activity in the House of Commons where backbenchers are going against the whip. And they are doing for a variety of reasons. And some of that is because it's not what their constituents want.
Yeah.
And they are there to represent their constituents. So when you've then got an MP that also sits on, say, the Select Committee for Transport, they will have to balance the needs of their constituents and then also the sectoral needs for the committee that they're on, and also the party line. And if they choose not to toe the party line, the balance there is that going to be damaging to their career? And therefore they can't represent those needs? Or should they hold true because the people that they represent won't elect them in again if they go back? So it's an incredibly complex situation. The House of Lords don't have to worry about being elected in. So that's a very different area. And the speed that legislation passes through the House of Commons, sometimes we are better off targeting at the House of Lords for our conversations, because that's where all the scrutiny happens. So they will take a piece of legislation apart bit by bit and really go through it in a granular detail to make sure that it's going to do what the overall purpose of it is supposed to do. And if they don't like it, they will throw it back to the House of Commons. And I think a great example of that was the small boats legislation that's gone through very recently. And you get this ping pong effect. And it'll go back from the House of Lords to the House of Commons, and they'll debate it again, make changes, and then it will go back to the House of Lords, and they'll scrutinise it again. And it can go back and forth quite a lot before they pass the legislation for royal assent. Something that's more relevant for us, I'd say, is the Flexible Working Act, which is now waiting royal assent. That should, I think it might have happened last week, actually, or this week. And that's a real move forward for those with care responsibilities. So parents or those with elderly relatives that they need to take care of. There's a lot more protection that's enshrined within legislation for all of those people now. And although we are the motor industry, we still have a lot of people, and those people do have responsibilities outside of work. So I can see that having an impact within our sector.
Okay. Out of interest then, you mentioned, you know, the backbenchers, the House of Lords, actual ministers. But for most people outside of the work you do, all we will generally see is the bigger names. So from your perspective, is it more important to interact with backbenchers who are part of committees, interact with people in the House of Lords, or does it depend on the topic you're talking about, or the aim or the target that you're trying to achieve?
It's my opinion that everybody has value. And the most wonderful thing about our democratic system is how it's accessible to everybody. And because it's acceptable for everybody to have a voice within these different arenas, I think then you've got to take on board everybody's point of view. And we're supposed to come to a collective agreement that best represents what we want to achieve out of the whole thing. Mm. So I think if you had an interest in policy and had strong views about something that's not working for you personally, or something that's not working for your business, or not working for your training, anything that impacts you, there is a policy answer somewhere. And you can attack this by different ways. You can do it personally. You can go on to the Parliament website and find the relevant select committee, find who's on that committee, and then petition them. You can go to your own MP, and most MPs generally have their clinics on a Friday. That's when they tend to be in their constituencies. But they are there to represent you. So you can take your concerns to them and say, these are our concerns and what are you going to do about it? Or you can, if it's a sectoral concern, you can approach somebody that represents you within that sector. So within the motor industry, we are one of those people that you can come and approach, and we can talk to you about it. And we can either give some information or insight about any pieces of legislation that are currently under review, anything that's currently in play, how they can get involved and get their voice heard. And we've had a couple of members approach us, and they've either got involved with us with working groups with organisations like IFATE at the Department for Education, or we've empowered them with tools to proceed with it themselves, because that's what they wanted to do. They were passionate about getting their particular point through personally. That's what they wanted. So all we did was enable them with the tools to do that. Or we can bring it into our greater strategy within IMI policy and public affairs, because we are here for our membership.
Yeah. I guess just a couple more questions then. If you were to highlight some work that the IMI has done surrounding policy to show members why it's important and how proactive you can be, where would you shine a light? What topic would you pull out as an example?
Example for work where we've worked really well with our membership was definitely be the MOT consultation. And you can find that report on the website. And we are waiting for the next expert working group. There were over 4,500 responses to that consultation. And 38 people were called forward to join that expert working group. The IMI is part of that group. So I think following the activity of that would be something that I think would be of interest. Legislation that's coming forward, anything around self-driving cars is an exciting space at the moment. Anything around artificial intelligence is very interesting from a technical point of view, and the complexities and ethics around that legislation. And it's going to be impactful to our sector as to what investment we're going to see from manufacturers, because they want to bring that technology within our borders. Unless we have the legislation to support that, it's a bit of a barrier for that to happen. From the education point of view, we're seeing massive amount of reform there. We've got a great relationship with IFATE, and we do have a working group for small to medium sized enterprises. We've still got space at that table if people wanted to get involved with that and give their views of what their experience was training young people, especially coming out of the pandemic. It's never been so important to get this information to the departments, so we can make those changes that then answer the needs for business as it stands today.
Okay, one final question then. In terms of how you would like the IMI to be involved in future policy decisions, perhaps, where do you want the IMI to be in a number of years?
Where do I want the IMI to be in a couple of years? This is a really exciting question. We've enjoyed enormous success in the short year that I've been in this position. And I think I'd like to build on that success and continue with the great work that we're doing at department and ministerial level. But I would like to see greater engagement from our membership so I can have that authenticity, that it's truly representative of what our businesses need.
Mm.
And I think having that great collective voice is how we're going to get those pieces of legislation through that work for us. And that's what we want. We don't want useless legislation being passed that puts barriers in the place of business and education.
Okay, Doug, I think we have got more than enough there, unless there is anything that you want to add that you think listeners might want to know, need to know.
If you would like to discover more about the work of Policy and Public Affairs, do take a look at our website and have a look at our reports for the various consultations that have been passed.
Mm. And I think on that note, that's a good way to end this podcast. We've covered a lot of ground, and we hope you enjoyed listening. And we'll see you again on the next one. Thank you very much.